Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at WVHTF.org. The West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers. Online at WVAFLCIO.org.
At the legislature today, a number of questions about transportation in the House Finance Committee. Members wanted to know if the Public Port Authority has any role in protecting ports from chemical leaks, or if the State Department of Highways could protect roads from debris after heavy storms. And Senate Majority Leader John Unger joins us to discuss his proposed legislation to get children healthy and active. This is the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. Two bills passed the Senate unanimously today as Senator Doug Facemeyer of Braxton County returned to the chamber after suffering a broken ankle just 1 week before the session began. It was health issues, however, that took center stage for lawmakers, particularly issues facing children, with the introduction of a new bill from the chair of the Senate Select Committee on Children and Poverty. Ashton Mara reports.
Senators voted to amend Senate Bill 316 on third reading today. The bill defines the statute of limitations for third-party complaints to be filed in civil suits. Senate Judiciary Chair Senator Corey Palumbo explains.
Current law essentially tolls that statute of limitation on the third-party complaints, which means there is no statute of limitations. At any point during the pendency of that case, the defendant can bring suit against another party into that case. This purpose of this bill was to provide just a limited tolling period of 6 months after the expiration of the normal statute. So essentially, if the defendant was sued within 60 days of the end of the normal statute, this would provide another 60 days to bring in another party.
Palumbo's amendment to extend the 60 days in the bill to 180 days was adopted, and the bill unanimously passed.
Engrossed Senate Bill 394, redesignating Health Sciences Scholarship Program as Health Sciences Service Program. Third reading of the bill.
Senate Bill 394 changes the Health Sciences Scholarship Program to the Health Sciences Service Program. Education Chair Senator Bob Plymouth says the purpose of the program is to recruit health professionals to rural areas of West Virginia rather than provide money for schooling. Senator Ron Stallings was the lead sponsor of the bill and says the program simply wasn't being utilized.
There was money being not used because it was up to $10,000 or something like that. And frankly, $10,000 a year is not enough money to entice someone to stay in a local area.
The bill allows an individual to receive a larger portion of funds and extends eligibility beyond doctors to dentists, nurses, psychologists, and other health professionals. Stallings' Health Committee took up a bill introduced on the floor today, backed by Senate Majority Leader John Unger. The Move to Improve Act requires an additional 30 minutes of physical activity in the school day.
What Move to Improve does is it takes the physical activity aspect of it as well, that research shows is very important. So it goes into our elementary schools and our middle schools and really try to instill in our students the importance of good nutrition and physical activity.
Unger says it is not an additional requirement for schools, but instead will be integrated into lesson plans.
Because research shows that as the body's moving, so's the mind. And children learn better if they're moving versus being sitting still.
The physical well-being of kids is the next focus of his Select Committee on Children in Poverty. Last year, the committee focused on improving access to nutritious foods. And the senator says the new bill complements their accomplishments. Together, he says, they can improve the health of the state's children.
Hopefully, this will address the childhood obesity issue in West Virginia, and ultimately address the health problems that many West Virginians face, be it diabetes, overweight, hypertension, heart disease, and other things that tie back to when they were a child, when they didn't get much physical activity and nutrition. So we're hoping to offset that.
Stalling says he's hoping to offset it, too. He says creating a healthier generation could ultimately decrease the amount the state will pay for Medicaid in the future.
There's a lot of findings in the first part of the bill, and it just talks about how much obesity costs us in real dollars. And, of course, that translates into Medicaid cost as well. Of course, this is just one end of the equation. That's the physical activity end of the equation. The other end of the equation, frankly, is nutrition.
Stallings wants to take on the issue of nutrition in low-income families by changing SNAP, or food stamp, benefits. The senator introduced a bill directing the Department of Health and Human Resources to ask the federal government to disallow the purchase of pop and candy with food stamps in West Virginia.
Our SNAP benefits are being used for buying pop and candy and potato chips, whereas they could be used to really provide good nutritional foods. So I see this potential as a real way to have healthier kids.
Stalling says the two bills will work hand in hand to improve the overall health of children. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
And joining us tonight is the sponsor of the Move to Improve Act and the chair of the Senate Select Committee on Children and Poverty, Senator John Unger. Senator, welcome.
Hi, Beth.
Is there anything you'd like to add to the Move to Improve Act from our report just now?
Well, I think Senator Stallings mentioned about the importance of having nutrition and physical activity for a healthy lifestyle. And both Feed to Achieve last year that we worked on as a Senate bill and it passed talks about that, or actually addresses the nutrition aspect of it. And this is just a continuation of Move to Improve is bringing in the physical activity. So both of them go hand in hand as far as trying to address the health issues and also student achievement of our students here in West Virginia.
So Move to Improve is the follow-up to Feed to Achieve.
That's
nice,
right?
Titles, by the way. Very clever. How is Feed to Achieve going? That was passed last legislative session. Are we feeding? Are we feeding for free?
Well, a lot of counties have signed up for this. Actually, we're seeing a lot of effort and also a focus in on participation rates for breakfast particularly. We focused in on breakfast because at that point, about 20%, the average 20% of students were eating breakfast, because breakfast was being served at the beginning of the school when children were getting off the school bus, the bells were ringing, they had to get to the homeroom class, they needed to catch up with their friends. Well, this moved it to after first period or during after or first period or after homeroom or first period. And so actually we've seen participation rates go from 20 to about up to 70%. So children are actually going to school and eating. The other thing we're finding is student attendance is up and also behavior problems are down. Now, we don't have the results in for as far as the testing is concerned. That comes later on in the year. But there's direct research. There's research out there that shows a direct correlation between student achievement and good nutrition and good physical activity. Mm-hmm. So that's what these two pieces of legislation attempts to do.
And that'll be interesting to follow up with that testing to see how Feed to Achieve is working. The Senate Select Committee on Children and Poverty, it's been about a year since this effort began. Do you feel you're making any progress?
I do. We've been going around to the various communities. We've been listening to a lot of people's ideas. Feed to Achieve was an idea that came from the people out in the community. So's Move to Improve. A lot of people came forward about the importance of healthy lifestyles and physical activity and demonstrating the connection between an active body with an active mind equals student achievement. Also, that there's a coalition of a lot of people coming together of our children, our future, that's actually rallied behind these initiatives. And each time we pass one of these initiatives, it gives hope to people that, hey, we can make a difference. And there's a groundswell of people coming together, focused in on children issues, particularly children in poverty, to try to address the problem here in West Virginia. And we've been getting a lot of national attention as well, where what we've been able to do here, that other states are starting to look at West Virginia and saying, look what they're doing. We ought to be looking at doing that here in our state.
And when you're traveling the state at these hearings, you're not just hearing from the folks who are working with people in poverty. You are talking to the folks who are struggling with poverty and asking them for their ideas what could help.
That's right. And that's why we get outside of the Capitol. I mean, there's a lot of people that will come to us, can afford to come to us, the time and the resources to talk to us about their ideas. But the people out there that are struggling day in and day out, they don't have that time or luxury. So we go to them. And that's what the idea of the select committee going out into the communities, listening to residents and people who are living on the margins and hear their ideas, hear their concerns, and actually get a face to an issue. Because so often we can be surrounded by the marble of the Capitol, and we forget that the words on the paper of these bills actually are going to impact people. And we can see it firsthand, the impact that we're having.
You're having a meeting of the Senate Select Committee tomorrow, 9 a.m., and the presentations are on child obesity. You can bet that we'll be there with our cameras and have a report for our audience tomorrow. Let's move on to the chemical leak.
Okay.
Because yesterday, after hearing the presentation from the expert who warned about the presence of formaldehyde, you seemed very shaken and concerned that maybe the government wasn't being real straightforward with us and what's in the water. There is a disagreement in the scientific community about the effects of formaldehyde. Do you still feel that way, that the government still is not being forthcoming?
Well, I think anybody that heard that testimony was shaken of the possibility. And there is a debate going on about formaldehyde and what the amounts and so forth. But the gentleman that spoke is very credible. He's a member of the Environmental Quality Board, also professor at Marshall. But the issue comes down to this. The government keeps saying we don't know much about this compound. We don't know what the effects this compound, what it breaks down to, and the short-term and long-term effects of it. This has been going on for 3 weeks. And I think people are frustrated in the sense they want to start getting answers. And what's interesting is that although they continue to say, people continue to say that we don't know much about it, as soon as someone steps up and says, here's what I've done as far as research, here's some of the tests that I've come back and found, and this is just a warning that this could be the case, all of a sudden there's a move to discredit it, saying that person's wrong. Well, you can't have it both ways. Either you don't know what is going on and what's breaking down and what the effects are, or you do, and then you can discredit. But to say you don't know, but this person's definitely wrong, I think is very frustrating. Mm-hmm. The people demand the truth. Mm-hmm. They want to know. They want to know answers, and this response of saying I don't know is not acceptable anymore.
The Commission on Water Resources, have you called Adjutant General Hoyer?
Yes.
Before you, or any of the governor's people, or any of the people doing the testing?
We have. We've had General Hoyer in. He's talked about testing. Mm-hmm. But again, of course, they were testing for the original chemical. They're not necessarily testing for the breakdowns because, again, they don't know exactly, or they say they don't know what this could break down to when it's mixed with chlorine or it's processed and so forth. And so really, you know, we really need to bring together the best and brightest scientists. I'm so disappointed in that the president did not include this in his State of the Union address. You know, he included Philippines as far as the disaster there. He's included other things. Here's over 300,000 people contaminated by their water, showing the vulnerability of the protection of our water resources. And that's just, it could happen here, it could happen anywhere in the country. I think that the national level, we need to be focusing in on this and getting some answers to the people here that's been contaminated with this chemical, as well as throughout West Virginia and throughout the country. Are we doing enough to protect our water resources?
Mm-hmm. Your bill, Senate Bill 373, calls for more regulation of above-ground storage tanks. It's now in the House, and it's been assigned to three committees, Health, Judiciary, and Finance. Are you okay with that?
Well, I mean, that's their decision to assign it to three committees. I don't know why, other than the fact they want to have a thorough examination, but I do want to emphasize the urgency. The urgency is this, is that we don't know what's out there. There could be freedom industry-like companies that's leaking or spilling into other people's drinking water. We don't know. Now, keep in mind, at the time when this spill occurred, it was actually predecessor. It was the preceding it was an Arctic temperatures where it froze. Mm-hmm. And Freedom Industry says one of the reasons why it happened was it froze and then, of course, thawed out. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Earlier this week, we've had the same Arctic temperatures. Today, it's warming up. We have no idea what's out there. The urgency is to get this bill passed so that registration inspections can happen immediately, so that the situation that happened in Kanawha County will never happen again anywhere mm-hmm. throughout West Virginia. But right now, we don't have those assurances until that bill is passed. So I would hope that the House, and they've proven it before where they've suspended rules, were able to move it, study it the way as much as they need to, but also move it along because the people demand action.
There's your message to the House. The governor has required Freedom Industries to dismantle this tank farm, remediate the entire property. Do you agree?
Well, yes, but then there's also the concern about, okay, the chemical that's there, where are they going to move it? Are they going to move it to another facility that's not registered and inspected? Another facility that's leaking? They tried to move it to Nitro. Of course, that found inadequate. Mm-hmm. So whose backyard, Freedom Industries, is going to move this chemical in West Virginia where the government's not able to protect them, protect their groundwater or their drinking water? It could leak into theirs. So that's my concern. We dismantle it, but the chemical has to be moved or disposed of somewhere. Mm-hmm. How are they going to do it? Those are some answers that need to be given to the people.
You keep asking those questions, and when you get the answers, let us know, all right? Okay. Senator John Unger, always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Beth.
And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 450 to define public place to clarify that facilities duly licensed to sell alcoholic liquors on the premises may do so in outdoor dining areas. Senate Bill 454 to define the owner of a dam for purposes of the Dam Control Act. Owner means any person who holds legal possession, ownership, or partial ownership of an interest in a dam or the real property the dam is situated upon, or has a lease, easement, or right-of-way to construct, operate, or maintain a dam. And Senate Bill 455 to create the West Virginia Move to Improve Act regarding physical education and activity in public schools. Among the bills on second reading tomorrow, the amendment stage, Senate Bill 267, to ensure that state courts have jurisdiction to prosecute fraudulent or unauthorized uses of government purchasing cards. Senate Bill 381, to require CPR to be taught in the public school system as a condition of graduation. And Senate Bill 405, to require the permission of the presiding judge in order for jury qualification forms to be released after the conclusion of a trial. There were no bills to be considered on the House floor today, so the focus was on committee meetings. The House Finance Committee discussed all aspects of the State Transportation Department, from road damage due to storms to renewing driver's licenses. Aaron Payne reports.
Committee members heard from all the various offices that make up the Department of Transportation, the Division of Motor Vehicles, the Division of Highways, the State Rail Authority, the Division of Public Transit, the Public Port Authority, the Aeronautics Commission, and the Office of Administrative Hearings. Like in many other budget hearings, officials from each office laid out how they will handle their finances to deal with the upcoming tight fiscal years. As in his State of the Division of Highways presentation to the Senate Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure, Secretary of the Department of Transportation Paul Maddox explained the state roadways paving cycle was at a 28-year average and needed to decrease that number. Delegate Larry Williams wanted to know about the paving cycle for West Virginia's secondary roads.
I've been told that the repair of secondary roads resurfacing, so forth, been moved from a 15-year cycle to a 20-year cycle. Is that factual information or not factual information?
I wish it was a 20-year cycle.
You wish it was 20 years. It's longer than that.
My data, which I provided to the Senate Transportation and Infrastructure Committee a couple of weeks back, over the past 5 years, taking an average of our county road system here in West Virginia, the resurfacing paving cycle, we're up to 33.7 years.
Okay, well, that's worse than the average.
Finance Chairman Brent Boggs says that after learning the condition that the state roads are in, it is now up to the legislators to develop a plan for remedy.
It costs money to maintain roads, and we've been reluctant to raise taxes here to do that. But our surrounding states have county road systems, and the counties pay for it. They have township road systems, and the townships pay for it. We have the sixth largest road system in the state. And or in the nation, and I think that that's a very sobering thought when you take into account the size of our population. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us in trying to come up with some unique ways to better fund our roads and get that repaving schedule down to something that's more reasonable and better serves our citizens.
Delegates had questions for the other sections as well. Delegate Kevin Craig asked Acting Commissioner of the Division of Motor Vehicles, Stephen Dale, about the process for renewing a driver's license when a citizen's address has not changed.
In other words, I go through the security system at the airport. Mm-hmm. My ID is the valid driver's license, and they don't say, "Wow, I need to verify your address. Can you bring a utility bill with you?"
Well, I believe they're probably relying on the driver's license
exactly.
to have it.
And so why don't we? I mean, if it's not expired, nothing's changed, sign an affidavit, I'm at the same address, and renew people's driver's license.
Well, the people do move. There is a necessity to have validation, of course, for the real ID. That is one of the requirements, that we scan in a document that has your residence address. However, with the residence address, the information is because there are individuals that will put a false address on their driver's license. It's a small percentage of people, and our requirements are, we probably have 20 or 25 different documents that we will take, a utility bill, your voter registration card, your gun permit.
The topic also turned to disasters, both natural and man-made. Delegate Bob Ashley wondered about road damage from falling trees after heavy storms and if there was anything the department could do to be proactive rather than reactive.
We are aware of the problem with the derecho and then with Sandy. You're correct. There was a lot of trees and debris up on our roadways and, of course, brought down power lines, and we can't go in and cut the trees till the power's cut off, and it's just it was a mess statewide. We have put more of an emphasis on trimming within our right-of-way. We're bound to within our right-of-way, and usually on the county route system, it's 15 foot each side of center line, which doesn't go up the bank a great deal, but usually it hits just behind the ditch line.
With new facts surfacing about the recent chemical leak into the Elk River, Delegate Nancy Guthrie posed a question to the Port Authority about how they could provide relief if such a situation should ever arise again.
In light of the chemical spill, I think we're all looking for some relief, and it never occurred to me until you stood up this morning that maybe you might be jurisdictionally one of the relief points that we could work with the federal government on. And I just kind of like to get your take on that.
We would be happy to be involved in that. The way that FEMA administers that grant now, it's my understanding that the applications are directly to FEMA instead of through a governmental entity. Governmental entities have to apply, but there's no single fiduciary agent anymore. FEMA accepts the applications directly from the applicants.
Last year, Governor Tomlin formed the Blue Ribbon Commission on Highways. The commission held hearings across the state to get public input into road funding and other issues. The commission's formal recommendations have been voted and approved by its members, but the final report isn't ready yet and probably won't be until after the session. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today. Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 4374, to increase the amount of purchases which the state may make without competitive bids or in the open market, from $25,000 to $100,000. House Bill 4375, to establish the West Virginia Voluntary Employee Retirement Accounts Program within the State Treasurer's Office. House Bill 4377, to allow the Commissioner of the Division of Motor Vehicles to waive the license revocation period in exchange for the DUI offender's immediate installation of the alcohol test and lock device and participation in the alcohol test and lock program. House Bill 4378 to provide that permits to kill deer or other wildlife causing damage to cultivated crops can be automatically renewed yearly, up to a maximum of 5 years. And House Bill 4379 to authorize the issuance of special Family of Fallen Hero license plates. There are no bills up for passage or on second reading in the House tomorrow. And this has been the Legislature Today. We're sorry that Agriculture Commissioner Walt Helmuth could not join us today. We'll talk to him at a later date. Tomorrow, Ashton Mara is your host as we continue our series of interviews with members of the Capitol Press Corps. Joining us will be Eric Ayer, the State House reporter for the Charleston Gazette, and George Homan, the legislative correspondent for the West Virginia Press Association. He also writes a column for the Charleston Daily Mail and the State Journal. We welcome your comments. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at WVHTF.org, and by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at WVAFLCIO.org. And as a reminder, you can get podcasts of the Legislature Today on our website, wvpublic.org. And also, you can watch it on West Virginia PBS at 6:30 and 11:30 weeknights on West Virginia PBS.